Edwin Encarnacion, right, as a pinch runner.
Yeah, which is really, really funny. Although he was somehow actually faster than the guy he was running for.
There are very few times in an average day I'm running 90 feet.
That's just
it's
a really
cool.
Nice. That is a really nice gesture from a guy who obviously has been around the league a long time and has all the star power in the world to be selfish about whatever he wants to be selfish about. And welcome to episode 20 of Artificial Turf Wars, where the winner of the World Series determines home field advantage in the All-Star Game. I'm your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined, as usual, by Josh Housam. How you doing tonight, Josh?
I'm good.
Yeah, you feeling like an all-star this week?
Oh, yeah, always.
It's every week for Josh. We have, of course, a recap of the Tiger series that occurred before this whole all-star extravaganza. We're going to talk a little bit about the Home Run Derby briefly and the all-star game appearances of your favorite Blue Jays. And then look ahead a little bit to the second half, what's going to happen or where the Jays are going to go. We have an interview with Dan Zaborski of ESPN, and he indulges us at one point by playing Swing and a Drive. Then we have some questions. We have a do-over and a final thought possibly from, I don't know, guys around here who have thoughts, finally. Jays finished on a bit of a high note. They won 3 out of 4 from the Tigers. I always like to hear the words 3 out of 4 because 4 out of 4 is really, really tough. But 3 out of 4, definitely doable on the homestand. Any notables you take away from that series?
Well, a couple things. I mean, we mentioned before that Happ had a couple rough starts. Specifically, one of them was against the Tigers, and he was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like this team that's full of all these right-handed power hitters, and he just completely shut them down. The Jays won the game 6-0. I think it was, you know, not your longest Happ outing. It was more of a 2015 one where he went 5 2/3, struck out 9, and but didn't give up a run.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of laboring. Even though the results overall were good, it seemed like some of the pitchers were laboring to finish off Tigers hitters in that
series. Yeah, that happened to Sanchez, too.
Yeah, it was like five and dive night at the Rogers Center.
Yeah. Happ has 20 strikeouts in his last 2 starts.
And you look at him and you're like, what are you striking these guys out? Like, if I watch Jose Fernandez and Chris Sale, I look at one pitch and I'm like, oh, I get it. Nobody can hit that.
And then they throw another one, you're like, oh, they can't hit that either.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they can't hit the fastball or the slider. Ah, I totally understand what's going on. J-Happ is a bit of an enigma.
You know, he really mixes his pitches well. And when you do that and you can throw mostly where you want with average to better stuff, you can get strikeouts, especially against teams that swing for power. Although Cleveland tries to swing for power too. So,
but it obviously can backfire on you when you're not locating that stuff well enough, right? That's what happened to him, presumably in his start in Detroit, where he just got lit up. They were catching way too much plate, and then an educated guess will get you somewhere if you're a hitter.
It was like that start against Tampa Bay. Like, when you don't have your stuff, you can't locate, and you're not throwing 98, you're going to get hit. But for the most part this season, he has been doing that. So, good for him.
Yeah. Yay, Happ. Yeah, there was a
Jay
lot of...
Happ.
Oh, I was cheering him. Yay, Happ is his Scandinavian cousin. I don't know where I'm going with that. I'd like to just observe that R.A. Dickey seems to be the forgotten man in this whole mix.
Yeah, I was going to get to him, but go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. No, you...
Well, it's just people... If R.A. Dickey does something well, it's just sort of, okay, fine. You know, people don't say anything. They get shoved like, oh, this guy sucks. Get him out of the rotation. Stupid knuckleballer. Since May 1st, he has a 3.1 ERA.
And frankly, when you look at how his outings go, in a lot of ways it's not that much different than J-Happ. He seems to be inconsistent in April, unlike Happ, but then he kind of settles in, and when he's on, teams really don't know what to do with him, because as much as he's frustrating to watch at times, between the completely mystifying knuckleball and the half decent secondary stuff in terms of he can put the fastball where he wants. It's only when he really leaves a meatball for the fastball that he's been killed.
His fastball's not good.
But but because the knuckleball's there, it's a useful pitch for him. It's not like, oh, I have to throw the fastball, it's going to get mashed every time. In my mind, anyway. And yes, we would still like to see him use the changeup more.
I would. He's a really good one. And he actually has thrown it a bit more recently, which is nice. It's just sort of that other pitch when he's in a non-knuckleball count, like 3-1. And he can just throw something just to keep those batters off target, especially the lefties. The other thing with Dickey, though, the real problem is, Jim, he's just extremely homer prone. So, because even in that stretch where he has a 3.1 ERA, over half of the runs have scored by home runs. Probably more than that. He's given up 31 earned runs, 17 homers. I don't know how many of those earned runs scored, like, in addition to the, like, with base runners on, but
right.
Very, very homer prone.
Did he start the game in Chicago with all the home runs?
Yeah, he gave up 4.
Yeah. But they were all solo shots.
Yeah, the game where they scored seven home runs and lost.
So, I mean, you limit base runners, I guess. I guess I'm fine with Dickey if he's not walking people in addition to the homer problem. But he's really, I think he's still underappreciated, though, because he does literally take his turn every time out.
Yeah.
And that
he's a very valuable piece.
Yeah. So, Ari Dickey, you got your props on this podcast, which is rare, I think, on any podcast. So we'll move on to the home run derby, since we were talking about home runs. I didn't even know I was going to go there. That's how clever I am.
Well done.
I really only watched the home run derby for one person, Giancarlo Stanton. I wanted to see what he would do. And honestly, he did not disappoint in any way, shape, or form.
No kidding. What a show.
Yeah, he's superhuman. I understand he's not the world's greatest hitter, but he hits the ball harder than anyone on earth right now. And in a home run derby, that's entertaining.
Yeah, he's just something else. Like, he's just got otherworldly human, superhuman power. And, you know, when he hits them, it's just, you just can't not look. If you're not awed by his home runs, you shouldn't be watching baseball.
There was some sort of 30-second bonus time if you hit so many home runs over 440 feet or whatever. There was some weird rule, right? His average homer distance was 456 feet. Like, that doesn't even... It's like... It reminds me... Him and Aroldis Chapman, to me, are like freaks on the opposite side of the ball. He hits it harder than anybody else. Chapman throws it harder than anybody else. But you have to, like... redesign chart shapes and sizes to fit the weird thing that is Giancarlo Stanton on it. So that was a lot of fun. The raw numbers of, oh, how many home runs did he hit doesn't mean anything, because they've only had this format for, this is 2 years now, where the number of home runs was even possible to go that high, really.
But so, the raw total is still funny because the promotion the Marlins had. Did you see this?
Yes. We will give our ticket holders a certain percentage off that matches the number of home runs that Stanton hits in the home run derby. He hit 61.
Yeah, no cap. It's like, yeah, usual home run derby winner will hit 35, maybe.
Yeah. Somewhere in that fine print, unfortunately, there was a cap.
Oh, there was? Too bad.
Yeah, so it's 25% off.
Oh, I didn't see that. Boo, you suck, Marlins.
Wow, the Marlins suck either way. They suck if they give the discount because they had to give a 61% discount, and they suck if they don't.
But if they give a 61% discount, they might actually get some fans in there.
I don't know about that. Wrong. That stadium is the wrong place at the wrong time. All right, so that was the only reason to watch that. Although, somehow, Stanton spent the entire second round trying to put one off the video board in San Diego and was unable to do it. And then Mark Trumbo comes up and does it on his very first home run.
Well, Mark Trumbo has pretty big power too.
Yeah. And then you compare the two and you realize that Stanton is still standing on his shoulders, basically. It's just crazy. Shall we get to the actual All-Star game then? Which Stanton was not allowed to participate in.
But some Blue Jays were, so that's more notable.
Four out of five elected Blue Jays got there.
Well, they were all there, but yes, Estrada was not able to pitch.
True. We have pictures and uniforms and things, but we still have him with his backitis and such. So the first guy into the game was Edwin Encarnacion, right? As a pinch runner.
Yeah. Which is really, really funny. Although he was somehow actually faster than the guy he was running for.
Also true. He still only made it to third base on a double, though, from first. So obviously this was to give David Ortiz and the David Ortiz retirement tour an opportunity to cheer him as he went off the field, right?
Yeah, of course it was. And, you know, everyone came out of the Jays, or sorry, the Jays, the AL dugout, you know, gave him their hugs and their goodbyes. And it was a nice moment. I mean, I say what you want about Ortiz and the Red Sox and all that, but he is a well-loved player by both fans and other players. And it was nice to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I juxtapose what everybody says about Ortiz against him destroying a bullpen phone and him popping into press conferences to complain about scoring changes. And I'm like, well, he must be a complicated man, but on the overall, everyone seems to like him. So I don't know him. He doesn't play dirty. I've never seen him, you know, going with his spikes up or take a run at somebody. So in that respect, it's good. He's a good ambassador for the game that way, notwithstanding his appearance on a certain report at a certain time somewhere.
And lots of flares on that.
Second guy into the game, was that technically Aaron Sanchez?
Yep. Actually, Sanchez might have come in before Encarnacion.
No, Sanchez was the fourth. I'm pretty sure I saw... Yeah, no, he pinched in... I think he pinched in the third. Anyway, Sanchez comes in for an inning, gives up a run.
Yeah, he wasn't very good.
Gets a couple ground balls, a couple very hard-hit ground balls up the middle, etc., etc. You know... It was clear he was a little nervous.
Yeah, and it's fine. You know, it's like he got to do it. He had to have his moment. That's what it's about, right? He got to take the mound in an All-Star game.
Yep, and you cannot take that away from him, and nor should you. I think he 100% deserved to be there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we talked about it on the last podcast that there was no way he wasn't going to get one of the injury replacement spots because he just absolutely deserved it.
Yeah, yeah. Then we had Josh Donaldson into the game.
Yep, Donaldson and then Saunders. And it was like pop-up city from the Blue Jays. Encarnacion got on base with a walk, but the other three plate appearances were all pop-ups.
Saunders' first pitch pop-up. Just because you want to savor your All-Star game at bats. Now, was Donaldson in the game in the final inning?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Donaldson played the rest of the game at third base.
So that would mean I think he started the... Was he involved in that?
He started the double play. That's right. Yes.
He started the final double play. So you get to say you did something
to win the game
of some kind of significance. I heard someone complaining that I think it was Cargo hit the ground ball. He didn't run it out to first, and that's why it was a double play.
No, it was Arenado.
Oh, Arenado. Yeah. It's guys, relax. Relax. Chill out. It's okay.
But also, he just thought there were two outs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you watch him run. He starts to run and then sees the throw to second, breaks it down, and then sees them start to throw the first. He's like, oh, crap, and he picks it up again.
Wow, that shows you how deeply his mind was in the game anyway.
Yep.
I think that's fine. I really think that this whole, you know...
It's an All-Star game.
It matters. No, it doesn't matter. It's kind of random chance. You could flip a coin and decide who's got home field advantage in the World Series. I would care equally as much.
Yeah.
So All-Star break, is it the ESPYs tonight as we record this?
I don't care, but yes.
I've never watched an ESPY be awarded to anybody for anything. All I ever see is pictures on Instagram of people.
So why are we talking about it?
Because after the ESPYs, everybody gets a day off, right? The whole one day to be with their families. And the Blue Jays start the second half.
But they do.
And happily, look at all the people who are already on the West Coast because they're starting in Oakland.
Yeah, well, and then there's all the... I'm not sure if you've seen, have you seen the pictures? It's like with Tulowitzki, Goins, Travis, and Stroman in Cabo.
I have not. I've seen the tweets. I haven't looked in depth into the Instagrammings. Are they enjoying themselves?
They've been tweeting pictures, yes. And they got like a giant fish with them on the boat. It's pretty fun. So yeah, a bunch of Jays on the West Coast already.
So no excuse for that first night hangover other than the, I'm actually hungover.
Flu-like symptoms, Greg. Flu-like symptoms.
There's a lot of that that goes around in baseball. You're never quite sure what it means.
It's such a weird travel schedule, though. So they're in San Diego for the All-Star game. They go up to Northern California to play against Oakland, back down to Arizona, all the way back up to Seattle, and then back down to San Diego.
That's a lot of crisscrossing your own tracks.
Yeah.
I assume there is some other Eastern team that's doing the same thing or a similar thing at the same time, but I have not
probably
gone to look into it. Oakland is a tough park to hit in. And then they get the one easy park in the West, Arizona.
And then two tough ones.
And then two more tough ones. Well, I'm glad this is a better pitching team than it was in the past. There's some hope there.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the Jays have a really good shot to do, you know, win all those series. They're not very good teams.
Yeah, Seattle started off real hot and faded. Arizona's been questionable at best. San Diego has really, they tried to do that whole, we're going to sign like 17 people, was 2 years ago. And of course that never works because the core of the team really wasn't that good in the first place. Was it Preller? Yeah, AJ Preller tried that.
Yep.
So
they traded everyone away.
Round and round it goes. The Marco Estrada situation.
He's going to start in the first series, I think.
Really? I thought they were talking about somehow making sure he did not start. So he's going to start in the first series, but not in Arizona. They're trying to. They didn't want him swinging the bat again.
No, I think he's starting in Oakland.
Oh, okay. I had heard he wasn't starting until Seattle, but that may be my mistake.
Hey, these plans keep changing, but I do not think he's going to start in Arizona, one way or the other.
Yeah.
They have off days around that, too, so they can do whatever they want, really, which is good for Sanchez as well. I think that they'll try to do as much as they can to make sure those guys get the rest they deserve.
Yep.
But this slate is really good for the team coming out of the break. They're really hot, and they probably didn't want to have to stop playing. Just they'd won 8 of 9, was it?
And, that sounds about right.
And so it's like you don't want to come down, but when you come back and you're really chasing down the division, you get these weak teams, it really gives you the chance to build back that hot streak before you start playing the tougher opponents.
Yeah, and the Jays fared well when they had to play their own division, which is all tough except for Tampa. So, yeah, I think it'd be great for them to take advantage as they go out of the break. Yeah, we'll see what happens, I guess. You got to play all 162 before you know what the heck's going on. Yep. Still better than coming out of the last All-Star break.
Oh, yes.
All right. At that, we are going to go to Dan Zimborski, who is going to also try and tell us about what's going to happen in the second half of the season and play a little swing and a drive with us. We'll be right back after this. And it is our pleasure tonight to be joined by Dan Zimborski of ESPN and ESPN.com. Always a pleasure to have you on board. Dan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys?
We're good. We're enjoying the All-Star break. The days off are good for the media as well.
Why are you enjoying that? There's no baseball.
Yeah, no, exactly.
He's a liar.
I'm trying to pack my house, okay?
There are the entire house? You mean like the doors and the windows and the... And
no.
the copper piping, and I mean, you don't bring all that around, do you? I mean, that's pretty unwieldy.
I believe there are prohibitions in the real estate agreement when you're doing that sort of stuff, that lawyers get involved.
Okay, we're moving the things inside the house.
Yes, but I'm trying to put it all in boxes, and it's extremely difficult.
Well, the key is for all your furniture to be boxes, and then it's always packed.
You sound like a bachelor, Dan.
it's true. I still have a lot of boxes in the basement that never get open.
All right, baseball, because purportedly our podcast is focused on that. It has been a interesting first half. What stands out for you? I'm going to leave that wide open.
Fun thing.
Well, as an Orioles fan, The fact that the Orioles are in first place stands out the most for me.
I said fun things, Dan.
You didn't say fun for you. Oh. You said fun, and I assume that you meant fun for me, because it is very fun for me. But, I mean, the Blue Jays are two games out, so it's not like they're the Rays.
Oof.
Ooh, yeah. Well, but don't worry. There are no Tampa fans to hear that. So
take that, seven people in attendance.
How have the Orioles done that with no visible starting rotation?
Well, they definitely don't have a visible starting rotation. They've been hitting the ball a lot. And you see, as tricks go, hitting the ball really far is a good one trick to have.
Yeah, we saw that a lot last year in the first half.
Yeah, but I mean, they're at like 140 home runs or something ridiculous, because we're in the year of the home run again. It feels very retro, that we're gonna have to like just put our calendars back 10 years, change our wardrobes and our tastes in music. I mean, not mine, I guess. They're kind of the same, but it's a look back to how baseball was for a brief period in our younger days.
Well, and of course, as the home runs have increased, baseball, as usual, the official baseball has absolutely no explanation for why that is.
I think maybe they don't. It's one of those things, because to do that surreptitiously creates more problems than admitting it. Because then you have all the theories about how, everyone discovered a super steroid, or the ball is juiced, or I don't know. There's only so many different conspiracy theories you can have that cause home runs.
The Earth's atmosphere is thinning.
Yeah, it's something to do with Brexit. It's just causing all this. The EU is what holds down offense.
Makes sense.
There is a real physicist, Alan Nathan, who writes for BP and studies this stuff. He says that it actually only takes a very small increase in exit velocity to get a big increase in the amount of home runs hit. I'm not going to argue with a mathematician or a physicist, but that sounds like a really weird... Like, that sounds like there were a lot of almost home runs hit over the past 5 to 10 years.
I actually thought you were going to say, but, and then you were going to present the Brexit theory, because I was looking forward to see how that was. Because when you have Dave Cameron at Fangraphs, Dave Cameron the Prime Minister.
Just way too easy.
Yeah, it's a little suspicious, the whole thing.
I feel like
but,
it. Has anyone ever seen him in the same room at the same time?
No, I've never seen the British Prime Minister all in a room. So, for all I know, he's just like a TV character, like I don't know, Mr. Bean. But anyway, the thing is, however we got to where the home runs are, the home runs are back, and it's like that weird, it's that weird year like 1994, where you kind of have to believe, if it's not just some random coincidence, that everybody suddenly discovered drugs during that particular offseason. But there are a lot of home runs, and I guess we'll just put it at that.
Unless you play for Atlanta.
Well, they allow a lot of home runs. So it's not like they're completely stingy. They do share the love. They just don't have anybody who should be in the majors in the lineup. Oh, Freddie Freeman. I'm sorry. I shouldn't. I always forget that he's still kind of in this. He's still the Kelly Leak of the Atlanta Braves. Oh, wait, the Bad News Bears won games, didn't they? So it's not a good comparison at all.
I thought the Bad News Bears in the end of it went real deep.
Yeah, that's why it's not a good comparison, because unlike the Bad News Bears, the Braves aren't winning games.
No.
They're one of the loser teams that the Bad News Bears beat.
Yeah. So, well, we'll just accept that the Braves are bad.
Yeah.
And that Freddie Freeman should feel sorry for himself.
Yeah, he should feel sorry for himself.
Go ahead.
Wouldn't you?
Yes. 100%. Did you watch any of the All-Star stuff?
I watched part of it. I just don't get as excited about the All-Star game as I used to.
Did you watch any of the Derby?
Well, I watched part of it, but it's almost background noise to me. And that's unfortunate, but some of the events of the All-Star game have kind of, in my eyes at least, have lost their luster significantly. I don't know if it's being jaded and being an adult and doing it for a living, or if it's really different than when I was a kid, but it just doesn't feel the same as it used to. It's just not an exciting event. It's just kind of a meh exhibition.
I think other than Giancarlo Stanton, the home run derby was meh. But
were either of you surprised that given how the weekend was apparently the David Ortiz send-off tour that he was not in the derby?
Yeah, but maybe he didn't want to. Actually, did he give a reason why? I'm trying to think if he was asked about that.
Well, he said a lot about having sore feet and things like that during the season. So
it's possible. I've had sore feet before. Haven't you had sore feet?
I've never hit that well with sore feet.
And he run. I mean, he does a lot more running around than I do, and I've had sore feet. So
he doesn't do a lot of it.
But you still have to get from base to base.
Running is probably a generous term.
There are very few times in an average day I'm running 90 feet.
Yeah, that's
exactly 90 feet.
I probably should be running 90 feet more, but that's another story.
That's for the Pokemon Go podcast we're going to do later.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still behind. I know everything about the Pokemon. I just haven't had time to do it, try it out, because I've been like swamped with work, unfortunately, which is weird, but I guess I'm supposed to do my job. But
well...
I'm so behind on catching Pokemon. They're probably all over my basement, and I don't even know it.
So another part of the David Ortiz retirement tour was Jose Fernandez was promising that he would throw Ortiz three straight fastballs down the middle so he could hit a big home run. And then he threw a changeup first pitch, and Ortiz made special note of that in the post game. So what do you think happened? You think Fernandez lost his nerve?
No, I just think that it's one thing to say you're going to lob one up and then actually do it when the moment's upon you.
Yeah, his teammates are probably like, you do remember that we're playing for something a little bit here, right, Jose?
And really, well, I don't know if the Marlins are really playing for something when all is said and done.
Hey, they're in a postseason spot right now.
Yeah, they are right now. I don't expect that to continue because that team has so little depth once you get past the front line.
What do you think about retirement tours in general?
I'm not a real fan of them. I think they become a little too self-absorbed. I think they only work when the player is still playing well enough to be worth cheering.
Well, that certainly accounts for our team. He's having the best season of his career.
That was put badly. I didn't mean worth cheering. I mean their actual play itself is cheerable. I don't think the Yankees should have been booing Derek Jeter his final season. That would be ridiculous. But Derek Jeter as a player was completely done, and it was just kind of a sad trudge. And if you're going to do the retirement celebration, if it's just like this plodding, like a little kid going to school when he thought it was going to be canceled for snow and it wasn't, and he's walking to the bus stop, that was the Derek Jeter retirement tour. Just
that's quite the analogy. I was saying the Ortiz one is not that.
He's having just an incredible season. It makes you wonder, like, hey, maybe you should actually stay if you're going to have an 1100 OPS.
Yeah, I'm curious. Like, what does Zips think his numbers would be next year?
I actually did an article on that a few months ago, and he projected very well because. Even at his age, he's going to decline quickly, but he's declining quickly from a pretty high point. There's nothing obvious in his batting profile that says he's going to fall off the table next year. It's not like it's just some sort of batting average on balls in play driven fluke year or anything. His peripheral numbers in that respect still suggest a player that hits the ball very hard and with good success. His hard hit rate is as high as it's ever been in his career. I don't have it in front of me, and I can't look it up quick enough. But I think he could have stayed around. But there is something to say for going out on top.
Absolutely. Well, there's only 2 years to go out. 1 year too soon, and 1 year too late. And you just described the 1 year too late with Jeter. So I figure go out on top. That's tons of fun.
Yeah, except if you're mountain climbing, then it's not the best.
Where does he get them, ladies and gentlemen? So the Blue Jays, we were talking about Zips. So is there anyone who is unexpectedly overperforming? Say a lot of people expected on our end, some people in the starting rotation to quote unquote come back to earth. And that's not really happened. What does Zips think of Happ and Estrada and the like?
Well, Zips thought Estrada would back off somewhat from his excellent 2015. It didn't think he would revert completely towards, you know, being just an average pitcher, but it did think he was going to give some of those games back. And, of course, he hasn't so far. His changeup is still excellent. His peripherals are still iffy, but the longer he outperforms them, the more you know it's real. It's the same with J-Hap. I hate saying his name so much.
We've gotten over that on the pod a few times.
I'm not Doug Zimborski, but anyway. I still think Hap's overperforming. I don't think he has quite as much of an arsenal as Estrada has that makes me think that he's going to outperform long term, but they'll take it while they get it, because really you're not going to get much pitching this trade deadline. So if you're going with what you have, it's not bad. And if Hap falls back to earth a bit and Estrada at least regresses somewhat when healthy, Stroman's probably going to pitch better than he did in the first half. So that's going to get balanced out. It's not like the rotation has been like unsustainably good. I mean, Sanchez has been amazing. But, I mean, there was always that potential in him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to see that they really gave him every opportunity to stick in the rotation before they threw in the towel and said, okay, you're a reliever now. So that's worked out really well for the Blue Jays. And they do worry me as an Orioles fan.
Well, and just on the other side of the ball, you mentioned all the Orioles offense. The Jays offense has started to hit better. But what is the projection like for guys like Russell Martin, Troy Tulowitzki, who have horrible overall numbers but have been much better since the start of May?
Zips has still been pretty positive on them. Let me pull them up. But more so on Tulowitzki, Russell Martin is at that age where he can drop off the cliff a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It has him going forward about a 720 OPS or so for Russell Martin, which is fine, but he's a catcher. He's 30. He's 33 now. This could be him going forward, unfortunately. But there's still hope. Tulowitzki, I'm more confident about. Obviously, his raw numbers were going to come down somewhat after leaving Coors. That was inevitable. But Zip still has him as a 770 OPS guy going forward. And that's still an excellent shortstop, even in a year where we've seen offense go up considerably. So I don't think the Jays have a whole lot to worry about in that respect, which is good because, again, I think this is going to be a really boring trade deadline.
Yeah, especially if your last year's crazy one.
Yeah, that was a cool one. This one's not going to be as cool. I think it could be. All of a sudden, Mike Trout's traded and there's some sort of weird Chris Bryant challenge trade or something for Madison.
I think if Mike Trout got traded, it wouldn't matter. The straight headline would be the biggest of all time.
Yeah.
We're going to put that on You Heard It Here First, though, for sure.
No! Dan Zaborski says Mike Trout will be traded.
All right. I think that's probably enough intelligent discourse for one day, don't you?
Well, I don't know if we've really had intelligent discourse. But
perfect.
Attempted intelligent discourse.
Would you like to play a game?
Yeah, I'll play a game.
You'll play a game. You will indulge
would
us.
Would you so like to play a game?
The game is called...
Are we playing Global Thermonuclear War?
No, because you cannot win that game.
that was with... Whopper and Joshua were using 80s technology. You know how many... We could do a lot more chess games than he can.
Oh, my goodness. No, we're going to play a game that requires no skill. That's the important part. That's why we invited you on, and we don't want to be unfair.
That means I'll fail at it, so by all means.
So the game is called Swing and a Drive. For those who have not heard about it before, which would probably include you up until about 10 minutes ago, we're going to play the first half of a Buck Martinez call, and he's going to either be calling a fly ball out, a extra base hit, or a home run. And then you just have to tell us after the first half of the clip what he's going to call in the second half of the clip.
So I could say fly ball or home run.
Or extra base hit.
Oh, I have to pick the one. I can't just say all of them.
No. You got to choose one.
You can't play on Greg's words here. There. No cheating.
And are these going to be super famous calls? Are we going to see him going back in time and calling, say, like the Joe Carter home run? Like,
no.
Even though he didn't. But no, it's not going to be like that. Okay.
He didn't call the Joe Carter home run.
No, I said go back in time and do it.
Oh,
and
no, then I have no time
that'd
machine.
That'd actually be pretty cool.
I have only a recorder.
Because I'm trying to think of famous Buck Martinez calls, and honestly, I don't have any famous Buck Martinez call in my head. Unless I forgot one.
That's good. You are a blank slate. That's really funny because he used to call. Didn't he used to call the Orioles?
Not that I remember, at least not that I watched. I'm a radio guy. I always listen to Angel and Jim Hunter, and then in the old days, John Miller, and Fred Manfro after that. But
all right,
but yeah, Buck was there for a bit.
Yep, like 3 or 4 years. But I think he was the color guy.
He was on Masson with Jim with Gary Thorne.
Oh well, I never watched Masson, so
yeah.
I literally have no recollection of Buck Martinez in Baltimore.
Huh.
I remember Jim Hunter.
Yeah, he was with Jim Hunter.
That's how much Dan loves Buck.
I'm losing my mind. I think I listen to too much stuff. I can't remember anything anymore. My brain has been broken. Why don't I remember any of this?
All right, you don't have to.
Now I'm very confused. But let's get on with this.
Okay, so the first clip is Michael Saunders. You do get to know the batter. Here we go, Michael Saunders.
Fly ball to deep right field. That's over. Trumbo.
And we'll let Josh tell us whether that's a home run, an extra base hit, or a fly ball.
I think I know.
I think it's a
buzzing, or
yeah, you can go first if you like.
No, I'm cheating. Then you okay. Go first.
I think that's Buck screwed that up, and it's a bubble. It's a bomb.
You think that's a bomb? All right, and Dan, what do you think?
I think it's an extra base hit because it's over Trumbo's head. Yeah, so it's not gonna be caught because Trumbo's not that great a defensive player. But I think he implied that Trumbo had a chance at it. And if it was near a home run, I don't think Trumbo would have any chance because he's not going to run up the wall and make a huge grab. So I'm going to say extra.
Off the wall, here comes Donaldson.
Off the wall.
All right. See, I thought you were trying to trick us, Greg, with the like playing the over his head bit. And he
read it. Beautiful. I'm not perfect. I'd also like to point out that they just threw some shade at someone who didn't know how many outs there were the previous inning. I think it was Machado. Just for fun. Okay. Number two, Justin
Smoke.
Yeah,
I bet you wish you had Manny Machado.
No kidding.
Forgetting outs.
At shortstop? Sure. But not at third base. Justin Smoke.
Justin Smoke. Swinging a drive. Deep to right. Get it.
Ooh.
And you're up first this time,
Dan, you're first.
I think Buck was pretty committed here. I think that's a home run.
All right.
Yeah, I got to go with him on that one.
You guys are good.
Ball, this ball is gone. For Smoke, his second career home run off Talis.
There you go. That was a good one.
I could be wrong, but he invested a lot of his soul into that call.
When he gets into the get up, that's usually when it's gone.
All right, we'll try another one here. This is Jose Bautista. This is clip number three.
I think that's going to be caught.
All right. Josh has it as caught. Dan, what do you have?
I didn't feel it in his voice. Plus, we haven't had a caught yet. So I'm going to say caught.
You're going to say caught. All right.
Canna is back. He's going to make a catch. Oh. Tagging it third. Bautista.
You hear the gas come out of the whole audience on that one, too. It's just a collective sigh.
You can tell because you can feel a home run in the soul.
You would think. You would think.
But no, he can't usually.
Well, Dan is 3 for 3 here, so I think he may have some sort of savant abilities where this game is concerned. Here we go with Ryan Goins.
Enjoy special experiences. Ryan Goins drives this one to left.
Now, I'd like to point out, Ryan Goins is a left-handed batter. just going to throw that out there.
See, that sounds like a trick, though. That sounds like a trick that you would make something that because you're trying to hint that it's wrong by giving us all the things so that we fall for it. I think that was an opposite field home run.
Josh,
me too.
I shouldn't have said.
And gone.
Shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah, what are you doing, Greg?
Yeah.
See,
all right.
I'm psychologically taking you apart. That's the key to this game, I think.
I'm getting a little weirded out right
you
now.
Don't play the call. You play the host.
That's probably very good advice because I'm playable. No, wait. Dalton Pompey. Do you remember Dalton Pompey? He played in the majors for a little while.
Really?
No, not much.
Yeah, he kind of fell off the popular imagination pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
He's not even old or anything.
No, no, he'll be back. He had a concussion this year and another leg injury, and yeah, it hasn't helped.
But, I mean, no one's even talked about him. I haven't heard him. Maybe I'm talking with the wrong people, but I don't think he's come up in a conversation I've had this year.
Because the guy he's not on the horizon for any playing time.
Yeah. He's got an all-star and an overperforming Ezekiel Carrera in his way, even if he was doing well. So, yeah,
Zeke.
It makes sense. Zeke! All right, anyway, Dalton Pompey did once play in the major leagues.
This is Dalton Pompey. There's a high fly ball.
Josh, I think you have to guess this one first, don't you? I've lost track.
You know what? I'm going to go extra base hit.
All right. Dan?
I guess I agree. I think that's an extra base.
Smart it's play. Okay. I can't lose now. Can't win now.
And that's going to be well inside the park. That's on.
When he started with a high fly ball, I don't think that made the warning track, to be honest.
He was too optimistic.
Yeah, it was like, oh, man. All right, so it is 5-3.
What?
No, 4-3. Sorry. 4-3 for Dan. This, of course, is our last question. It is a two-point question. Now, Pedro Alvarez is the batter. I don't normally do him calling the opposing team, but this is a magnificent call, and I couldn't leave it.
It's this ball deep to left field. Saunders is on the run right off the track. He jumps and makes a catch.
So what is that?
I think he failed to make the catch.
So that's a home run, says Josh. Do you say extra base hit or home run, Dan?
That's a home run because I think then it fits more from a drama basis if he's wrong. If he's just right, then it's not as exciting.
All right, if Dan's going with a home run, I got to go with extra base hit to at least make some drama on the score here.
Unfortunately, you were both correct initially, but...
Nope. That ball is down, and Saunders played it perfectly, but it was over the wall, and...
Okay, if he played it perfectly...
You see, the moment he lost the ball, that was that moment of catharsis that was being withheld from us by the host.
He never
touched
the ball.
So you knew it was coming.
That ball was just straight up over the wall, over his head, and Buck just called it as caught because he felt like the way he came down looked like maybe he caught the ball. And then he went, nope. You're a play-by-play guy. You can't say nope. And there's a double play. Nope.
Oh, and I looked up Buck's Orioles years. The reason I don't remember it is because I was already in Ohio at the time, and I was only listening to them on the radio at that point. Because this was from 2003 to 2009. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't remember that at all.
There you go.
Mystery solved.
We'd like to congratulate you on your victory in your initial play of swing and a drive.
Was I perfect? Did I sweep?
No, you got one wrong.
Oh, I did get wrong.
Yeah,
oh.
You did. You both had... where was it? I don't remember which one. Because this is so important. The Pompey one? The shallow fly ball?
Oh, that one. Well, I was smart to pick the same one. It's like on Final Jeopardy when you have more than double the other guy and you just bet everything but $1 more.
Yeah, because this game is exactly like Final Jeopardy.
Yeah, so you're sending us a check, right?
Yeah,
100%. Yeah,
in the mail right now.
I'm a little suspicious because we just had the game right now. I'm sure you didn't have time to go to the post office.
We have impressive mail service here in Toronto.
Canadians.
Sorry.
All right, Dan. We do thank you for coming on during the All-Star break, during your well-earned time off from covering esports, to talk to us about boring old baseball.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's always fun, guys. And we'll do it again.
And you can find Dan at Twitter. You just apparently start typing S-Z-Y-M and he shows up, I'm told.
Yeah, who would have thought that there weren't like 10,000 people with that ridiculous combination of letters in their name?
Who would have? Have a good night, sir.
You do the same, guys.
Bye-bye. And we are back after another long and meandering conversation. That's
those
good.
Work.
Yeah, those work. With Dan Zimborski. They go everywhere, don't they?
Nope.
They go nowhere.
Stupid buck. Nope.
Nope. how do you just...
Sorry, not stupid buck. Silly buck.
Silly buck. How do you stop and reverse a call in the middle of a call? And Tabler is dead silent, too, by the way, which is great. No, like, what were you doing there? Okay, we have listener questions, right? We should start with the usual level of seriousness we get when there have been very many games and the Jays have been winning. Those that were, we have from at KP Ratherwalk, Pilar Ratherwalk, which we'll explain in a minute. We have, what will happen first for KP? Walk number 11 or, and there's a picture here, or to lose control of these 11 dogs during its walk?
Yeah, for those of you who aren't familiar, KP Ratherwalk is a Twitter account that every time Pilar does not walk, which is often, it tweets a
bad
silly
Photoshop
picture. Yeah, of just Pilar's head on something else doing something involving walking, and says Kevin Pilar would rather walk in some fashion, like walk these dogs, than walk to first base. It's worth a look. It's funny.
And it must be hard at this point in the season to come up with a even vaguely different situation in which Pilar might walk other than actually walking to first base, because as we know, he doesn't do that at all, really. He doesn't like that. That's not a fun way to play baseball, apparently.
No.
So I think he's probably going to lose control of the dogs. Just looking at the picture and the varying sizes of the dogs, you can check it out on Twitter at KP Ratherwalk. And you can decide for yourself, I guess. Next.
This is from the C_hound, CM Flash. Should the Jays roll with Bautista at DH, Carrera at right field, EE at first, and upon Bautista's return? If so, where would Smoke/Colabello fit in?
Now, I said no when we said this, saw this question right off the bat. I know that Jose Bautista is not a good outfielder anymore, and his arm is apparently not in great shape anymore. But I still think you don't have a happy Jose Bautista at DH. And the happy Jose Bautista is kind of important here. Also, I don't know whether Carrera will maintain his new habits of getting on base so much. But you maybe have a different take.
Yeah, I do. The opposite one, in fact.
Gee.
I think you may be right about Bautista, which is why I think the answer, if you're going to do this, is that you alternate Bautista and Saunders through the DH spot. And even you can occasionally throw Smoke in there and give Carrera a rest. But the Smoke essentially goes to the bench because he's not hitting at all. And Carrera is. And he's a much better defender than right now, both Saunders and Bautista. And that's your best team.
Which is fair. And then the final point would be, where does Colabello fit in? He fits in AAA.
Yeah, Buffalo.
Yeah. Until he hits 400 in Buffalo, I don't think you'll see much of him up here. Even if Smoke continues to be meh, Smoke, in theory, switch hits and plays very solid first base defense. So there's a justification for him, putting him on the bench. Whereas Colabello shows up at first base and only hits from one side.
Yep.
Next, we have two from Olerud's Helmet. That's Olerud_Helmet if you're looking for them on Twitter. First one, should the Blue Jays qualify Dickey at the end of the season?
No.
Or Saunders? Do you think Dickey will retire?
No. Somebody will happily pay him $10 million or so to pitch. I mean, he's just as good now as he was 3 years ago.
But he doesn't need $17 million, which is likely what the QO is going to be, isn't it?
Yeah, somewhere in that range. And yeah, it's just too high for him. Saunders, I think, will get one at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, he's worth that roll of the dice because
he's this year's Estrada.
Sure.
The guy with the talent hadn't quite done it yet. Really cheap salary and then goes out and has a monster season in his free agent year. He'll get it.
Yeah, of course. Cross off the list that if he gets injured.
Right. I was going to say, if he stays healthy and plays and performs the rest of the season.
Yeah. And the second one from Olerud's Helmet was, who are your favorite non-Blue Jays to watch at the All-Star game?
You want to take it?
I have not so much to watch, but a story that I really liked from the All-Star game that sort of makes me think it might still be worth something other than home field advantage in the World Series. Miguel Cabrera was a reserve this year.
That's where I was going to go with it, too.
Yeah, Eric Hosmer was the starting first baseman, and Hosmer had hit the home run and was pretty much lining up to be the All-Star Game MVP, but you never know. Things get a little weird in All-Star games sometimes. Sometimes they go on forever. Miguel Cabrera went to Ned Yost, who is Hosmer's regular manager, and actually said to him, don't put me in the game until Hosmer's had his third at-bat, because if he does something really good on his third at-bat, he's sure to get the All-Star Game MVP, and that'd be really nice for him, and I don't want to screw that up by coming into the game too soon. That's just
it's
a really
cool.
Nice, that is a really nice gesture from a guy who obviously has been around the league a long time and has all the star power in the world to be selfish about whatever he wants to be selfish about. And every time I see him at first base with somebody, I want to know what that conversation is, because he always seems to be having such a good time.
Yeah. And he did this before, too, with Michael Kadir. He pretended to have a sore oblique so Kadir could get into the game and play first base. Not a guy who was going to make a lot of all-star teams, right? So, he seems to care about other people enjoying it, because he's made a whole bunch of them and had all kinds of all-star game moments. So I think my answer is the same. Like Cabrera, I enjoy watching him.
Super cool. All right, we got a couple more.
Yeah, I mean, one of them is from Travis Stewart. He's asking us, like, what are our Blue Jays deadline acquisition predictions? We've talked about this a few times. There's no point in really answering this yet.
Yep.
Well, we'll get back to this when we get closer to the actual deadline. But here's another one, though, from Brian A., who's asked a whole bunch, your buddy. Did you guys play baseball video games growing up? Which one was your favorite?
I did, but I'm an old person. I played Hardball for the Commodore 64. And because it didn't record... You do know what a Commodore 64 is, everybody, right? it didn't actually keep track of the things from day to day. Like, didn't have like a save file. So I would play a game and I would record all the statistics, and then I would keep track of it and just play against the computer. I have no idea why I did this in retrospect, but I had a lot of fun. And then I realized something really weird was that the players' attributes were not according to the players' names, they were according to the slots in the lineup. So if you put the number 4 power hitter in the first, suddenly at leadoff, he suddenly became very fast and good at bunting.
Yeah, it's so weird.
I was like, who designed
that? Me was
that?
RBI Baseball growing up. Those were awesome for Nintendo.
Mm. And did you have a favorite player in RBI Baseball?
Well, Ricky Henderson was unbeatable, because he had 20 speed, so like no matter what, if he was stealing, you could not catch him even if you picked off.
Oh my goodness. So basically we just reflected on the fact that although we enjoyed them, our childhood baseball games were completely flawed and not really suitable for any kind of simulation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the kids these days, will they ever know that? No. That about wraps up the questions, so that leaves us with a do-over. I think I had some audio here for the do-over that we were gonna, yeah, here it is. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think Michael Saunders has it in tough, personally.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think he's gonna win that vote. It's too many guys from popular teams.
Those guys sounded really familiar.
Yeah, we screwed that one up.
That was us last week claiming that Michael Saunders had no chance to win the vote in, which he got 17 million votes for at the All-Star game.
So here's our do-over. Michael Saunders is going to win the vote.
I think he's a lock.
Yeah, 100%.
Totally justified. All right. And now we never have to talk about that again. Okay. Do you have a final thought, Mr. Howsam?
Yeah, it's just my final thought. It's just, it'll be interesting to see how the Sanchez stuff plays out. I think with all the stuff going on and with them letting him pitch in the All-Star game, I think that the plan right now is really going to be him to start all the way through.
Yep. Barring anything else, I think you're right. I think they're looking for a reason for him to not start, as opposed to looking for a reason to keep him in the starting rotation.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool. I am intrigued by this team now, finally, after seeing how they played actually for 2 weeks straight well. So I was kind of not sold on them for 2 months, because I still don't know what they were doing for those 2 months. So I'm looking forward to what happens out of the break. That first week out of the break is always interesting to me, to see if a team hits the ground running.
Agreed.
Alrighty. We have a winner, which if I was supposed to announce that last week and everyone's holding their breath, I do apologize. But for our survey contest, we have a winner. Kate wins our jersey of her choice. I believe you have already contacted our winner, yes?
Yes.
Kate has no Twitter handle, so you cannot follow Kate on Twitter. Kate has a no last name that I'm allowed to share with you, but I assure you, Kate is totally a real person. And that doesn't look suspicious. No, really. We do thank everybody for their participation. We have taken some of your suggestions to heart, and we're going to try and make podcast as cool as possible going forward.
Yep.
I think that about sums it up. So that means that you have been Joshua Housam at Joshua Housam. I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010. And our guest was Dan Zaborski at Dan on Twitter. And we'd like to thank him for joining us.
It's at D-Z-Z-Z-Z.
Oh, sorry. Right. And this was episode number 20 of Artificial Turf Wars Special All-Star Edition. And we'll see you next week.